Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Lefa Kolodi is a four-piece alternative band from South Africa. The members are Lerato on vocals, Shanesh on guitar, Sydney on bass, and Yakin on drums. Often referred to as punk, the band seeks to push the boundaries of the genre with influences such as Nirvana, Tool, Rage Against the Machine, and System of a Down. In 2025, the band released their debut EP, The Milk Was Finished, 'Cause We Were Thirsty. The EP was born out of jam sessions, countless writing days, and a shared goal to make music that feels. Music that shakes your bones, grabs your heart, and invites you to scream along. With themes of self-love, truth, and health, Lefa Kolodi aren't just here to make noise. They're here to say something. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Yakin and Lerato from Lefa Kolodi.
Lerato first, where are you in the world and how are you doing?
Oh, what's up? I am in South Africa at home, K1, at my grand's house.
Yakin, where are you?
I am at my house, well, on a farm, pretty relaxed, and I am doing great.
Okay, so let's dive into your creative world. So first of all, Lerato, at what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you feel cool? I want to be creating in this world. How did that journey progress and how was the band formed?
In terms of my journey, I was basically born into a world of art. Got a couple of parents that were in theater. Mom, aunt, uncles did a whole bunch of dance. So I was very involved in theater. Not involved, but I was around the scene then. Yeah. And hip-hop was always a love, so breakdancing, battling was always in my blood. And then starting to make music was about grade 7. I think I was turning 13 that year. I was just messing around on Fruity Loops. And got my guitar, my first guitar in grade 9. Couldn't hold chords nicely, so I just decided, fuck it, bass. My uncle helped me out with that. And then that's when I realized, okay, no, making alternative music is also nice. I'd already written bars. I'd already made a couple of beats. I already formed an album, all of that. But I had a book for alternative music. I always wanted to just start a band through that ever since I started playing bass and getting good. Like, I had a book. And then post-COVID, I was looking to really start a band. So met up with Yakin through another homie called Tristan. We started a band called Headmistress. Yakin was the drummer. And Headmistress wasn't really reaching the sound I was looking for. So, linked up with Yakin, and he had already met Shanesh, our guitarist. And we linked up for a jam session. We're like, let's try this new thing out. And it was like a movie. As soon as we started jamming, it was like, yep, yeah. That's a connection. Like, in this book that I was talking about, I had a whole bunch of lyrics and whatnot, but the first page of it is a whole bunch of band names. And the gents just saw a whole bunch of weird ones, but Lefa Kolodi stood out to them. And that's kind of the formation of the band. Sid joined us through Drumfish, Yakin's first band, and I'm bassist of that now, but he was the bassist and we needed a bassist, and I got bullied to be frontman when I just wanted to play bass. And I'm grateful for now, because now we have an amazing band through Sid, Yakin, and Shanesh, and myself.
Does Lefa Kolodi mean anything?
It literally just means millipede in sort. I was high as fuck, saw a millipede, and I was like, Lefa Kolodi. that's a cool word. Yeah, let's use it for a band someday.
Yakin, your story.
So I wasn't born into a musical family per se. I think the only person in my family that, you know, had a musical background was my grandfather. And he played like guitar and the harmonica. It was like, you know, very, very acoustic stuff. So also very relaxed, not very loud at all. I got my first instrument, which was actually guitar. I got that in grade 8. And at school, I'd be that guy that always brings guitar to school and then jamming and then bunking class to play guitar. Yeah, I'd always wanted to start a band. So from grade 8 till about 2020, which is when Drumfish formed, but in those 5 years, I tried starting bands with whoever I could, you know, become friends with and whoever was keen. Some of the opportunities I got were kind of, they were a bit weird, I must say. Yeah, Drumfish started through COVID. I think most bands started through COVID because people wanted to get out of the house and they wanted to do something. And I think COVID kind of gave the thought process, if I don't do it now, I could literally die from a virus. And if I don't do it now, then I might never do it. So luckily, we started when we did, and we played like 45 shows in a year because like most people in COVID got retrenched. So that was great. Everyone came to my house. So it would be my buddy Charles and my buddy Sid. And then no one had jobs because we can't get jobs. So we just, like, every day of the week, it's practice, practice, practice. And we came up with, like, a lot of songs. And, I had a lot of fun with songwriting and learning about music. And a couple of years later, then I meet Lerato because I was looking to get, like, another project going because I felt that I needed more practice on the drums, and I just wanted to be a bit more outside of the box. Then I found this guy on Facebook called Creston, who recorded Drumfish and Lefoucaulti's first, you know, proper material. And
it's just a great musician on his own, like, yo, Limbrance, like,
he's recorded Drumfish, Lefoucaulti, Sarah Jade. Yeah, he's a wicked genius on just, you know, putting things together. And like, I think this would sound really good if you did. Ooh, you'd put us outside of our box. But for all the right reasons, I met Shinesh after I met Lerato. And Shinesh, like, he found out about me through a friend. Shinesh is like, yeah, would you like to, jam sometime? I'm like, well, I'm not doing anything today. Yeah, it happened, I think a couple days later. And I was like, this guy is insane. I hadn't really seen a guitarist that could do stuff like that. And yeah, I think right place, right time for everyone. And everyone brought their own vision to Lefoucaulti. It wasn't stepping on any toes kind of thing. Like, I think everyone has a clear idea of what Lefoucaulti is supposed to be, which is really cool. But then there's like different souls within each band member. So we'll have all these different things. And then it's like, what? How did you even think about that? And then Lorca comes with this. And then I come with this. And then it becomes a Lefoucaulti song. It's like a big pot of, what would you call it, Lerato?
We're a creative collage. It's very hard to like put us in words. We're just a stew of different influence from different bands and different styles. And we just, as soon as we come together, it's just a good ass gumbo. It's just, we're a stew. We're the perfect alternative music stew. That's what I feel like when I create with Lefoucaulti.
The creative process, you guys, it is just a mishmash of a stew and a creative collage. Anything to add further on how you guys create?
Okay, so with the first couple of songs, I was involved more in the instrumental writing because, like, I was bassist first and then I just, like, handed over to Sid and then Sid would just add some garnish. But now that we have a full outfit, it's just literally let the gents chill and jam. If I hear something dope, then I'll be like, try doing this like that. Like try repeating this part a couple of times. Can you give me a couple more bars to say a couple more words? And all I got to do is just write bars if I need help. Like fulfilling certain things, I'll go to Yakin, I'll go to Shinesh. Like Yakin and I have written a couple of lyrics together as a lay for possibly new songs and stuff. Like that's kind of how we create. We just look at each other and be like, is this dope? Can we try it at practice? And once we jam it, it ends up becoming a song. With the latest EP, it's been like it's mainly been us seeing how we can create songs as a group in a room, whether it be just two of us, and then going, guys, check this out. Mainly jamming and just seeing what we can do with it.
Tell us what's coming up. You mentioned the EP. Tell us more about it. What's happening?
The EP is kind of like the main thing we're, the main thing we've been working on, basically our whole development as a band. And we finished recording it earlier this year. It's out. And the milk was finished because we were thirsty. It's just our intro. There's no other way to put it. All those jam sessions is a compilation of like what we've done as a band over the past couple of years. And it's kind of like thank you letter to the fans and being like, we have these songs for you guys to loop now instead of you guys just seeing them on performance. I don't know what we're doing with the next project yet, but I know we'll be writing soon. And this one is just a thank you letter, and we just kind of want to have fun with these songs as much as possible while the EP's out. And we have CDs now, so I'm geeking out.
I love me a CD. For me, it's an energy exchange to you guys for the hard work that you do. I love the journey of the choice, the unpacking, listening from song one to whatever number. I'm not certain if you are aware, massive, not really in South Africa because we don't have the access to it, but overseas, there is a massive comeback of a physical. A couple of years ago in the UK, 5.9 million vinyls sold, the biggest since 1990. Also last year in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on, and there needs to be a high percentage or high movement of exchanges each day for a product to be in the basket. And because of the upsurge of CDs again, CDs are now back in the basket. And the research is showing that it's the teenagers, it's the younger kids that are diving into this world, not necessarily the older nostalgic people. And then we have the streaming platforms that people consume music on. Yakin first. What are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
I think that TikTok does a lot of work for what people think are cool these days, and Instagram, and I think at the moment that people, well, teenagers, young people are really liking the idea of physical stuff, and we could see that at the shows, and people like that we chat to and connect with. They're like, are you guys gonna do CDs and stuff? And like, there's a lot of bands that do vinyls, and obviously we want to do vinyls, but I think CDs are quick, they're simple, as long as we start somewhere. But I think the physical aspect is something that you can't like. I mean, let's take the difference between a lot of bands from like right now and bands from back in the day is like. Let's say Nirvana, they sold 1 million CDs, but then there's bands that will have just 1 million streams. We'd want to strive to have a connection with people where it's more physical and more something tangible and just, not just the stream.
Okay, Lorato, anything to add to that?
I agree with the dude. I'm actually shocked at the numbers you put up with like how much physical media has risen. That makes me happy because you're talking to a person that loves physical media. I still have my PS1, 2, 3, and 4. My parents have a whole collection of music, which I just tend to just go to and steal the CD from. Like Michael Jackson's Blood on the Dance Floor album is still one of my favorite discoveries. I found that on CD. I'm happy about that. And the fact that there's a possible chance to do that with our physical media. Whether it be Drumfish or Lefokolodi, like the band will be held as close as I was with my Tazos or my video games or my, you know
Oh,
what I mean?
Tazos.
Just all those, just all those little physical things. It's good that like that's going back to it. And like Akin said, 1 million streams versus 1 million copies of a CD sold. You know what I mean? Like, which one sounds doper?
Yeah,
It's the
but
CD.
it's interesting you say that because I speak to a lot of people who are, they are sort of participants in the industry. They're not creators. They maybe listen to streaming. They go to one or two concerts a year, if that. And I spoke to a batch of 10 people and then a batch of another 8 people. And I said to them, if an artist has had 100 million streams, how much money do you think they get in the back pocket? The first batch of people said $50 million. The second batch of people said $1 million. I said, actually, no, it's like $1,000, $500. And they were absolutely shocked and horrified. So there's definitely a conversation and an education piece that needs to be heard by the listeners to understand that it's not easy and the streaming does not make you guys much money, if at all. Your thoughts on that, Joaquin?
100%. I can say with shows, we definitely don't get our main income from shows. It's merch, like from the Zazas that we sell, from the shirts. People have a deep connection to merch because it's physical from the songs, if that makes sense. It's like,
yes. Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, the merch is what helped us essentially go on tour.
Larato, anything to add?
I just second what Madhu just said. Shit's more tangible. It literally means something. You're literally chilling with a dude that's sitting with a WWE title. That shit is priceless to me. I think that's merch. It's tangible and it also helps. So physical media, I feel like, is more important than digital right now, or at least more helpful to the musicians.
Larato, what do you enjoy about performing live?
First of all, interaction between... First of all, being up on stage with my friends. Like, doing what I do with my friends on stage. What we do in practice, you know what I mean? Like doing what we do in practice on stage. That shit is fun. And actually having... and fucking up a couple of times and looking at each other and laughing and being like, oops, we carry on. There's that. There's crowd interaction. When people started singing our songs back, I was like, yo. Also, just people responding. You can say the dumbest stuff. And the crowd will just go. You know what I mean? That is awesome too. And realizing the different dynamics you can do live compared to when it's recorded or when you're just practicing. Like, those are kind of the three things. And it just makes me feel alive. It's the one place where I'm the happiest, whether I'm b-boying or performing with the band. Being on stage has kept me alive. It just makes me happy. It's like what I live for right now.
Joaquin, what do you enjoy about it?
Same, in terms of happiness and energy and like euphoria, like when you get on stage. And for me, because like with drums, you got to be sort of angry at the world or at something. I don't know. It gets you through the set. There's nothing better than smashing your drums, especially like in the chorus or like the breakdowns that we do. Because I'm not an angry person. I don't usually let it out a lot. But in shows, I'm like, there's no problems there. It's just like, let's go. And then I enjoy that. And also, when we're playing a show as a band and we communicate through the songs and through looks, and I just feel it feels so cool that you can do that without even talking.
Larato, tell us more about the EP that's just been released.
This is a kind of like an us,
of course, yes,
jamming. And I'm just going to put my side of it, and it's mainly like lyrics-wise. I got to take a whole bunch of lyrics I've written since about grade 8 and managed to morph them and put them into songs. And a lot of them have meaning, significant meaning. So that's on the lyric front. You know what I mean? Like mental health, just loving rap, just having fun with syllables. That's another one. Just talking about weed and, yeah, like, you know what I mean? Just showing your appreciation for it through musicianship. There's a lot of themes that I've covered throughout my years, and I've only been able to express them now through this EP. This is years of lyrics. Like, years, dude, like voice notes and years of lyrics, so I'm happy with that. That's what the EP is to me. If people can grab some of the words and actually take them home with them and be like, oh, there's a profound meaning over here, or damn, that was syllable skill. What was that rhyme pattern? What was that rhyme scheme? Like, that's the EP for me. And musically, it's just the music I grew up with. The lads literally just put together some shit that we've we've literally listened to throughout our childhood, like 90s stuff, 2000 stuff. That's more me. And like some breakdowns in there. That's the EP. And it's just a fun little thing of like, this is how our brains work musically.
You're keen heading to you first. Now, guys, I know if I had to ask you this in 2 minutes, 2 years, 5 hours, without just giving any reasons, just top of mind. I know if I had to ask, like I said, if I have to ask you this at various times, the answers will be different because there are millions of them. I'm not saying favorite. Yakin, if you had to push play to five other artists, who would those five artists be?
Strongfish, Sarah Jade, because I love me my emotional stuff and
Yeah.
meaningful songs. Foo Fighters, Forever and Always. Number four, I would say that Idols is number four, and number five, I would say Queen.
Lorato, you're five. Yes.
Drumfish, goddamn. Charles, Sit on Bass, Eating Dirt album. My goodness, it's I listened to it while I was in England. But it's like I've been looping these songs before I joined the band. You know what I mean? That trip to London felt like I was in Camden listening to Drumfish when the EP dropped. So Drumfish is there. Like it's one of
Okay.
my favorite EPs. Infant Annihilator, because they're my favorite band of all time. Just like Michael Jackson, because I grew up on his stuff. Then we have to touch on hip hop. Tyler the Creator, just because he made me listen to one album and then I had to travel to like four different albums that I ignored. And like, I was like, fuck you, dude. Why are you so good? There's him. And then I'd have to pick one more hip hop artist. And I'm going to cheat and say the B-Boy video game OST. It has multiple artists. Eric Rakim. I learned James Brown through that. I learned Bobby Bird through that. Nina Simone. I learned like just my hip hop side, my hip hop sampling side, learning about the origins of hip hop came from that game. So, yeah, those are the five.
Yakin, so the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
Thank you for everyone that pays attention to our band. We really try and give you guys 115% every time, and we hope to see you guys at shows as much as you can. We love you guys.
Lorato, anything to add?
Like Eugene said, thanks everybody for messing with our music. It means the fucking world to us, and
Okay.
it made. Yeah, like it just thank you guys for whoever's listening to our music, for whoever's interested in what we're doing, and long may the scene continue. And thanks to the scene for just being awesome. Thanks to like just music for keeping us alive. Thanks for the people in the music scene for keeping us alive and just keeping us going and just being our friends.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.